Welcome to Authors First on the Artist First World Radio Network, artistfirst.com. Tony Kay in the studio. Thanks for joining us, everyone, worldwide. All broadcasts available free on demand from the website. Be sure to share our content with everyone you know on your social network sites. This hour on Authors First, it's my great privilege to introduce Christopher Whalen, W-H-A-L-E-N, author of Foxhole Father, The Guide for Fathers. And I know all of you out there are saying, well, I'm not a father, or I am a father, and I know a father, or I know someone who's about to become a father. And in all of those cases, we have a book and a website that will equip and inspire them to great heights. As you know, as a parent, financial success is imperative to success for your children. And Christopher Whalen, our guest this hour, is also a CPA, a business owner, entrepreneur, who has been raising his three daughters as a single father for a number of years. Now they're grown and applied his wisdom, business acumen, and skill to writing this book, Foxhole Father, The Guide for Fathers, and the website, foxholefather.com, to get all of the details. Let's give a warm Authors First welcome to our guest, Christopher Whalen. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you so much for having me.
Wow. Thank you for coming on board and supporting the arts on Artist First Radio. And an admirable and important topic for sure, that of fatherhood. And if you've been blessed with a father, a good father, you know how difficult that task can be. What say you, Christopher?
I agree 100%. Just some background on me. I was raised in a very Irish Catholic household where, you know, boys were meant to do certain things and girls were meant to do certain things. Up until the time I had my first child at about 24 years old, I never had held a baby, changed a baby. Fathers are so significant today, even more, especially with single-parent households. And part of my message is trying to empower them to give them the confidence to make sure they're involved in their children's lives every day and as physically as possible.
There's a backdrop to this book, and it's 3.5 decades of firsthand experience. Tell us about that journey. You married with optimism, had three beautiful daughters, and then a divorce.
Yes, I married my high school sweetheart, now, of course, the mother of my children, and going from 17 years old to 30 years old, there's a lot of personal growth, and sometimes people take divergent paths personally, my ex-wife and I decided it was best to separate and actually make two separate homes that really gave the correct parenting vision that we wanted to present. We were unable to come to a consensus on some very important parenting issues, and instead of doing what is common today, people stay together and showing children diverse and very different parenting options, we decided to separate and share physical custody equally and forge ahead with two separate homes, and it's been a really huge co-parenting success.
Congratulations, and I must say, something that happens rarely.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, but, you know, life goes on, and the need to compartmentalize what was and what is and what can be yet in the future all need to be factored into becoming a father. You became a single father. Did that remain for very many years, or did you remarry?
I've never remarried. I've had some relationships, but nothing got to the point of any serious cohabitation. That wasn't due to my being focused just on my children, but I tended to be, I'm very conservative, and even in my book, you'll see, there's some very, very specific advice about really taking your time before you force your children, especially in a divorce situation, to be forced to cohabitate with someone just to fulfill your romantic needs. So I really took that to heart, and I find too many people cohabitate too quickly, and sometimes the children are adversely affected and not adequately considered.
Well, and then there are the other children. You know, in other words, if you get involved with someone, they may have a past life and children
right,
of their own, and now you're attempting to merge all of it.
Right. This is what I say in the book is this. I've never heard of a person in therapy at 35 years old whose main complaint is that their father never gave them a stepmother. Using that as a baseline, there is no negative to your children if you stay alone, especially if their mother's alive. So using that as a baseline, I try to teach fathers and coach them to really think beyond themselves when they're making decisions about cohabitation. What is best for the children is the mantra in my book. My needs do not matter, only what's best for the children. Hopefully they coincide most times. But I find in my CPA practice, I do a lot of collaborative law with regard to families and divorces on the financial side. But of course, I've gotten to see hundreds of cases and how they've played out. And very, very often I see step families really causing developmental problems for the children involved. Just as you were saying, if they're step children, especially imagine a 10-year-old girl who suddenly is going to live with teenage boys that she's not related to. To an adult, it would seem fine, but these are real strangers to her, and it can be very frightening. And, of course, in the face of a parent who wants to do this and cohabitate or get remarried, many children won't say anything because they don't want to make the parents unhappy.
Oh, exactly. It's a lot of pressure, there's no doubt, including the just pressure of saying, hey, mom and dad don't live together anymore. That's a lot of pressure, okay, and a big adjustment at any age. Foxhole Father, The Field Guide for Fathers by Christopher R. Whalen, Whalen. Am I pronouncing that right?
That's perfect, yes.
The book available at Amazon.com, affordable at $11.08. You can buy a dozen copies, buy 10. That's what I tell everyone. Why? Spend $100, get 10, and then I'm sure you'll find 10 young fathers or maybe not so young fathers that could benefit from the teaching you'll find here, the common sense guidance. And you touch on the financial pressures and obligations of fatherhood in this book, and you call out fathers to be responsible on the job for their kids.
Yes, it's very common for a breadwinner, let's say the husband, the father was the breadwinner, and he's providing spousal support and sometimes child support, to of course, then abdicate the role of being involved with activities because, of course, they believe the mother who's being paid to do that.
Yeah, that's right. I paid my child support. You handle it.
Right. And so a basic philosophy, especially for single fathers, in a chapter in my book, there's a single father section dedicated just to single dads, and it's called Every Day is Your Day. And it expands on this idea that there should never be a time where you tell your child, oh, well, I gave mommy money for this, so I can't pay for it right now. Children might come to you looking to finance something or and you know you've given that money to your ex-spouse or the mother of the child. But never, ever discuss that with the child. Pay for it if you can and adjust it later. So my philosophy, that overriding philosophy, is that a father should be the masculine, non-judgmental sanctuary for his children. So that means a constant protection and shielding of that child, even in their absence, even if you're only seeing them every other weekend. You can still envelop that child in strong masculine love all day, every day. And I hope I answered your question.
Well, I love the Foxhole Father mindset philosophy that you've taken in this book. And it is truly an outgrowth of a lot of personal experience. You've been volunteering. You've helped young young people in counseling. So this book and the website and all the work that you're doing is an outgrowth of your collaborative efforts with
others legally, as well as helping in divorce resolutions and a prisoner reentry programs and mentoring young youth. And you're just, this is a culmination, audience, of a lot of experience that Christopher has committed himself to in research and prayer. You know, you are a person of faith, someone who believes that we are called to a higher purpose, and you've been successful at passing that on to your children.
Yes, I definitely have. I am a spiritual person, and it's interesting. I don't really have any problem discussing that, although it seems taboo, you know, and so many in the some parts of the media, let's say, will demonize someone who has a faith in God. I was raised in a very spiritual environment. The values and the benefits of that are so far-reaching, even beyond the specific religion. I'm one of six children. And I'm very, very happy. I had a strict Roman Catholic upbringing in Queens, New York. That's where I was raised till I moved to New Jersey. And it's overwhelming that the benefits of having a strong faith in spirituality has really helped me every day and helped me be a much better father.
You know, it doesn't hurt that you are a certified public accountant. You know, I think every father should strive for that position. Having your ducks in a row, knowing how to count the beans, managing your affairs, having a responsible life, those are all the structures that children need. They don't want to be worried about if dad's living in a van, driving around aimlessly without a job. They want to know that he is conscientious enough to be working towards stability financially and spiritually in every way, be available for that child.
That's such a good point, because I think sometimes fathers especially don't consider some very important components to the divorce. And number one, just as you were saying, a father should be solvent, have his own place to live. You know, children of divorce really worry about the parents when they're not with them, especially quite often it's the father they're not with as much as the mother. So you really should take it upon yourself to make sure they know you're happy, they know that you're okay physically, financially, and emotionally. And remember that I don't believe that children care so much about a divorce. I find children are slightly selfish creatures that just don't want to be they just don't want to be inconvenienced. So there's no doubt that in my situation, thank God that my children's mother was so open to co-parenting. And believe me, my ex-wife and children had to put up with my immaturity and, you know, for my growth in that whole process. But I find that children just want to know they're insulated. They want to know that you're there for them. There are a lot of children in houses where parents are still together, where the kids feel abandoned. So I want men, especially of divorce, to understand that the kids just need to know that you're there for them constantly. That's why I say every day is your day, and there is no real division just because you don't live together.
I love the military analogy of foxhole. How did that materialize, that concept, and for you, and why did you decide to make that the focal point of what you're doing with your book and with your website?
Well, for the first 5 or 6 years, my oldest, when she was six, is when, even before that, when the marriage started to have problems and we decided to separate, and I had never lived alone. I went from living with my mother to living with my ex-wife right out of high school and even during college, you know, so we were basically married. So at 30 or 31 years old, I had never lived by myself. So when in March of 97, when the separation happened and I moved out and moved myself and my three daughters into our new space they were going to have with me, that night when they went to sleep, it finally hit me. I really had a breakdown. I had the worst anxiety attack I'd ever had. And I suddenly felt alone. I really felt as if I was in the only way to describe it is that I felt I was in a foxhole. I felt I was suddenly in this heavy, wartime environment, needing to protect my children, needing at all costs, not even worried about sleeping. So that's really where the mentality came from. I was suddenly alone, having to take care of them at least half the time. And I really felt as if I was in this foxhole fighting for our lives. And so that's over time, I kept seeing myself as this foxhole father. And that's when I finally started to write this project. It really started as a journaling project. And that's what it just, that had to be the name of the book, because that's what came, that's where that all came from. I hope I explained that okay.
Now, the journaling, was that something that you learned by going to a counselor yourself to get your head on straight, or did you just naturally feel compelled to begin to write?
Well, I've always been writing since I'm a teenager. I've been writing short stories and things like that. I have a short story book, but I've been writing a lot and journaling for a long time. But definitely after my separation, I went immediately to counseling. I felt okay, but I didn't want to assume it. And I suggested all men, especially who do separate, even if it seems to be amicable, to really go get some counseling, go to a family counselor, to really try to understand what this new life will mean to you, what it could mean to your children that you might not be thinking about. There's no shame in going to see a professional who really could help you map out this next part of your life. So my journaling really was a good friend of mine, a client of mine, Eric Arouse. He's a national speaker on trauma and suicide. He's a brilliant, brilliant man, and he's a good friend of mine. He had also suggested, he had a young child, a two-year-old at the time, a few years ago, and he was asking me advice, as I also had daughters. And it just led to, a few months into that, he said, you really give really good advice, and, you know, you should really write these things down. You know, they're really good philosophies. And at the same time, I was working on this journaling, so it just happened to work together, and it just blossomed into this, into this project, into a full book.
You were able to convert a problem of your own, coming to terms with certain things and developing a philosophy to approach the new environment you were finding yourself in, into philosophies then that could be used by other people. And journaling allowed you to really concentrate and hone in on what that might be.
Well, especially after, right, journaling for me, especially when I was on my own with the children, one of the benefits of journaling, and I try to explain this to people, is that it helps you express yourself and it helps you be understood. That's one thing, especially a counselor helps with. But when men especially go through this, you have to remember that when men separate and there's a decoupling, if you will, uncoupling as they call it now, a lot of times men suffer more than a woman would. And I explain that a man's definition is really rooted in the woman he's with, even after children come. You know, he wants to make a home for a woman. He wants to have children to make her dreams come true. But even after the children come, he still wants to take care of and nurture that woman, and her acceptance of him and wanting him to be her man, if you will, is so significant to him. But when children come, quite often, a man is replaced by children in a woman's heart in a great way. So when a separation happens, sometimes, I know for me, it was you know, although it was amicable, that was such a hard thing to get over. My part of my entire definition was much more enwrapped in my children's mother, I think, than vice versa. So journaling, getting back to the topic, journaling helped me, since I'm younger, fully express my thought without reservation and without interruption. And it allowed me to feel that I was fully expressing a thought and that I was understood. And that's a very important emotional benefit of journaling, at least to me. And when I've turned people on to journaling, they thank me over time for having explained what it does for me.
Because it affects a man's ego, it's good to write, because then you discover that you have skill. You know, you remember, hey, that's right, I'm skilled, I'm competent, I'm capable, I can achieve, I can move forward, I can do so much, okay? Opportunity can evolve and allow you to open up. and become a new person from the experience that you've already left. And I think that's the, if you become overly committed to your job and you love your work and you're a devotee to the company, and then the next thing you find yourself on the short end of the stick, you know, it's the same kind of thing. You're like, wait a minute, ego, everything I know about myself was tied up in this career, and now it's not there anymore.
Right.
If you live long enough, this may happen several times to you.
Right.
It may be a wife one, a wife two. It may be a job one, a job two, three, four. If we live long enough, depending on where we are, lots of things are going to happen. The thing is, what will we take away from it? How will we become better, stronger, more confident fathers as a result of that struggle?
And competent and happy people. Your points are excellent. In the book, I discuss external definers, and all of these things we're discussing right now is that there shouldn't be a time when the loss of a job can devastate you, the loss of a woman can. I want all of my accomplishment to come from inside of me. I try to teach in my book how to remove anything external from affecting your emotional state, for example, because then you're never happy. People usually live their life just wanting to maintain perceptions of everyone around them being different people at different times. They want their wife to think this, their mother to think this, and their boss to think this. Endless energy is wasted, and then you're never truly happy. So that's part of what I learned through this whole process that was so important. Two things. One, that I'm a masculine person. I have a masculine sensibility. And although society would say that masculine has been demonized, by the way, which I talk a lot about in the book, that I can have this masculine sensibility and be a type A caveman type person, but I can still filter the proper parenting through that. And that's part of the reason why the underlying philosophy is becoming the masculine non-judgmental sanctuary, is that men don't have to change how they think. They don't have to think like women. Women think fine for them. But I only speak to men. And so you can have confidence that your masculine sensibility will lead you to parent the right way. When I held the first time I held the baby really was when my first daughter was born. And instantly my masculine characteristics and parenting kicked in and it's never stopped. And I just want men to have the confidence that they don't have to feminize themselves. They can be a loving and nurturing person. Masculine doesn't mean negative. It doesn't mean misogynistic. Masculine traits are excellent traits that our kids need as well as feminine ones. So those two things are some of the most important things I've learned through this whole process.
Especially if they're good traits. Always get blamed for the bad ones.
Right. In the book, the term masculine has been demonized and bastardized for a long time. I have a whole chapter really going over, showing, what's happened, what is thought of as masculine in the media today, which is ridiculous when masculine traits are needed. I mean, masculine traits have built the world as well as feminine traits, so they're not all bad, and I want to dispel that because men are marginalized, especially masculine men, and that should change because then it affects their confidence, especially when it comes to parenting.
And when there's a void in that, we end up with gangsterism. And
right.
That attitude, that mentality, that I'm tough, I'm powerful, I'm independent, I don't need you, but from the negative things rather than the positive virtues.
Right.
And I see that in our culture, and that's why. There's just an absence of, and it gets back to what you were saying, if you know who you are in yourself, and you don't need the bling, the other things, materialism to be confident in yourself, to know who you are, then those items have no value.
Exactly. I call it right. There's society has a definition of what's masculine, and we have to ignore it. Which I do. We have to ignore it completely, and that's what I do every day.
High school students involved in hazing are bullies and abusers and are very similar to college rapists If you were to ask them, they would see nothing wrong with their behavior in some way. They are innocent, as they don't know better. Their personalities and psyches are formed in homes over many years. The majority of the conversation and investigation should be directed at the parents of the accused and the parenting methods. Now, that comes from your blog, foxholefather.com, the website. And if you know a father or are one, we invite you to join. It's simple. Just go to the website, foxholefather.com. When you get there, you'll see that you can enter your email address at the link titled blog. Blogs are fun. They have regular feeds, RSS feeds, if you're equipped to deliver them. We have archives, October, September, July of 2014, and more coming. And we're looking for you to participate. Facebook, Twitter, your social networks can connect. Fathering, parenting, never too young, never too old to gain knowledge, working knowledge to benefit you. From our guest, sharing his philosophy and experience raising three daughters, a CPA, someone who has practiced giving to the community and helping those that are willing to accept help. Now, that's the other dilemma. You have to have a fertile field. You can plant a seed on rock and not get very far. But if you put it in dirt, soil that is fertile and willing and ready to accept new information, foxholefather.com, the website, join the blog. Christopher Whalen, W-H-A-L-E-N, book available at Amazon.com, I believe 1108, maybe you can get a better deal. Buy 10, give them to every father you know. And Christopher, thank you for supporting the arts, being our guest on Authors First. Tony Kay in the studio, don't send your questions and emails to me, send them to our guest, get involved with the blog. And thank you, Christopher, for joining us. This process of writing a book, what kind of research did you do? I know lots of personal hand-on, but were there other resources that you studied or contemplating in putting together this book?
Yes, I have. Me just being a CPA, but with my PhD in physically raising children, I'm lucky enough to have several heavily credentialed psychiatrists, psychotherapists, to really reference that they read the book, they read each chapter, they were heavily involved with me going through, and they helped me to structure things. So I definitely got what I wanted was a seal of approval from people that are doing family therapy, and many of them are now making sure that all the fathers in their practices are buying my book. So I took that as a seal of approval from all of them.
Absolutely. And you're right. There are venues where this book should be in doctors' offices, counseling. How about the Smithsonian? Come on. We need to have quality materials. It's not a big book. What's the length?
It's 60,000 words. About 250 total pages.
There you go. 250, 260 pages. And you have it organized under what method? By chapter? Describe it a little
bit. Right. What I did is, I didn't go research fathering books and seeing how they were written or the tenor of them. I didn't want to do that. I'm a very direct person. What I did is I took in my CPA practice and my business consulting practice, I give advice a certain way across my desk for 27, 28 years. And so I just took these topics, number one, and I just basically acted as someone's across the desk from me. What kind of advice would I give to them? Clearly, without arrogance, but clearly and directly. And I know that men sometimes have a short attention span. So a lot of women that have read the book are telling other moms to read the book. But the first part of the book, there's three sections. The first is a quick action guide, which are 25 topics with short direct advice from me as if you're in the midst of something, things like play dates or clean your room, things like that, where fathers can just read the first 45 pages of my book and get a really good overview of how I feel about many things. Then the second part of the book, the mid part, is just Foxhole Father. It's a traditional fathering book with chapters, with headings. everything you could think of, from sexual behavior to alcohol and drugs and the academic life. And then the third section is Foxhole Single Father, and that has an open letter to single fathers, and it's all geared just to the needs of single fathers out there. So I try to have a book that really runs the gamut of every possible father or father-to-be could like the book, and I urge moms to get the book. It's interesting, one of the offshoots of this book coming out, I'm getting a lot of emails from moms who tell me that they want their husbands to be this kind of father. And it's just been overwhelming that they're telling their husbands, this is the dad you should be. And I didn't mention women at all in the book because I'm a father. I would never try to give mothers advice. But, you know, I'm getting this overwhelming, I realized that mothers buy the book. It's women that buy the books often. So a lot of women are buying the books and giving and reading it and giving it to their spouses.
Absolutely.
So it's been very gratifying that I'm getting a lot of positive feedback from moms.
I love that. You have a link on your website for parent reviews, and
yes.
I think that's an excellent idea. Feedback always helps, including if they're in the United States Marine Corps or if they're a clinical psychotherapist. You know, those are
exactly.
Serious people. They've read your book and said, hey, you know, this is good stuff. We don't grasp it all overnight, audience. It's great to be able to read it, come back, contemplate it. Do you recommend journaling while reading the book?
I recommend to everyone to take my book. I want them to use it as a workbook. I want them to highlight things, circle things. I don't want them just to treat it like something that's not a workbook to me. So I have people who are taking pictures of pages with their notes and emailing those to me at info@foxholefather.com. It's fantastic. So if they're agreeing with me, they're disagreeing with me, it's really, I have a dialogue. This is all about fathers helping fathers. I don't feel I'm an expert necessarily. I'm trying to impart my wisdom, and I'm learning now even more by all the feedback. So I urge people to mark things, send me information, send me pictures of what you're highlighting in the book. And so I have an ongoing discussion all day with my readers.
You know, your father could be very poor and fish regularly and take you fishing, you could have the best father in the world, and he doesn't have two nickels to rub together because you used a shovel to dig up the worms. Okay?
Right.
Or you could have the same thing. You could be an attorney, a doctor, a CPA, any profession in the world, and benefit from the same common sense dialogue that says, you know, regardless of your position in life and in the world, if you follow these principles, you won't go wrong. The end result will be great. And isn't that what we want? We want the end result to be great.
And there's a great chapter in the book called Become a Calm Perspective in Your Children's Head. And this is one of the main important tenets of my parenting philosophy. I want everyone listening, including you, to think back to when you were a teenager and when you were in some kind of trouble, let's say in school or somewhere. And along in that troubling time, when you thought of your parents, they were probably mostly another point of worry for you. They were not a source of guidance and love and understanding. Sometimes the thought of what your parents would think was even more, what made you more fearful than what happened at school or whatever. So,
well, yeah.
I think that's something that we can change, and I've changed that with my children. So with my kids, although they go through things in my absence, they can have a conversation with me. My parenting is geared towards what's best for them. How does this impact them? So that's a very important lesson for fathers who have had dictatorial parents or parents who made them nervous. You can change that. You don't have to be a specter of fear in your children's mind in order for them to be strong and mature. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. You know, having open dialogue so that children can feel free to discuss their issues or their problems, then you're going to be the problem solver. Well, let's think this through. What's best for you? How will this work in your benefit?
Right.
You know, I think that's fabulous. And including on your website, Foxhole Father, you include your Foxhole Father mission. I think it's a great mission to raise your children to become fully functioning self-aware, self-respecting, self-sufficient, and independent adults. But you forgot the subtitle, and then let them do it. Because as a father of five myself with eight grandchildren, number nine on the way, I know firsthand that at some point you've got to say, hey, you've got to make your own life, your own decisions, good or bad, you know, and you got to cut them free. So there comes a point when that happens too, if you've been successful at in the early years of achieving these things. And I know it's a great mission, and it goes on. I won't read the whole thing, but be sure, audience, to visit foxholefather.com. Tell your four sons and your daughter, or your four daughters and your son, let them all know. Get on Facebook. Hey, I found this great show. I heard this interview. Fabulous author Christopher Walken. He's interviewed by a guy who butchered his name all night, but it's spelled W-H-A-L-A-N. And foxholefather.com, there's a mission statement on there. Read that. There's a blog. Enter their email. Suddenly they'll start getting all this spam. They won't know where it came from, but you can tell them you signed them up. Buy the book. Buy five or six for $11 at Amazon.com. You won't be disappointed. And thank you, Christopher, for joining us and giving us an overview of the inspiration, the genesis of this book, a project. And I know that it means a lot to you and to your family.
Thank you so, so much, and thank you for all the people listening tonight. And I look forward to hearing from the moms and dads through my website. I love the interaction, and I just want to make the world a better place for children and build stronger families as every day. That's all I'm trying to do, is help to build stronger families.
In the book, you do discuss finance, right, as a CPA? It comes up?
Yes, it definitely comes up.
And tell us about the role or the level of importance on a scale of 1 to 5. Where would finance be?
Finance is probably, with one being the most important, it's about a 1.25. I think it's one of the most important lessons. I have a chapter that's asked the question, is your teenager working? In my 27 or 28-year career in business, I've seen a real decline in the number of teenagers that are working within my client base. It's
and driving. They just came out this October of 2014 to tell us there's been a huge decline in 16-year-olds getting their driver's license, primarily because of the cost of fuel at $3 plus a gallon, $3.05, $3.09, $3.50, almost $4 a gallon at times, fluctuating. Global uncertainty, not knowing if the market will be stable long time. Kids living at home. Why go to the expense of getting a car, paying insurance, buying fuel, and then most of my income from that part-time job going to pay for that very privilege?
Right. And so when my philosophy with my children and with my custody arrangement, I had all of the Fridays and Saturdays. I had half the time, but I had all of the weekend nights. So those are sometimes the most expensive nights. So I told my children that as you get more social, you know, they have to help finance that. So a 14-year-old has a lot more Friday and Saturday night expenses than a 10-year-old. So I made sure we found some kind of work for them, babysitting, helping neighbors, helping local business owners.
Hello?
Helping local business owners. And so they learned the importance of money. They learned how hard it was for me to put money in my wallet and my ATM, which was the most important. They really got a respect for it wasn't just an endless fountain of money. And it really taught them today that, you know, even during their teenage years, it's just very, very important to get your children to earn their own money as soon as possible, make them responsible for it, teach them to save part of it, teach them to spend some money on themselves. And it is a big issue today where teenagers don't have to work. I bought my first car when I was 17 for $300, and I urge all parents to, they don't have to wait to have their children get their license. If their children are earning some of their money, their kids can pitch in for insurance and gas in some way to defray some of the cost.
Well, I mean, and then the cost of just the toys, the cost of the cell phone service agreement, the cost of the Kindle reader, the cost of the laptop, the cost of the internet access, the cost of the premium stations required for entertainment purposes, the cost of transportation, of going back and forth to the schools and activities, whether it's in sports and baseball and football. It's a big ticket. I think they estimate over $35,000 a year per child.
At least. At least.
So it can add up quickly, and if you have a couple of them, you know, and if you take your parenting responsibilities seriously as a father, you think twice about the second family, third family, right? Can I afford that? Can I really be responsible toward my children if I'm remarried and have more children, or if I take on additional children?
And in my book, I have a chapter called Foxhole Stepfather. And my basic rule would be, unless your children need you to remarry, your children need you to, then don't do it. Your romantic need is not important. And this is where some of the psychologists and psychiatrists who I interviewed for my book and let read and analyze my book, this is where we differed a little bit. They believe, well, if the parents aren't happy, the children won't be happy. But I you cannot slight the child, so you can't inconvenience the child. If you're a father with every other weekend, your kids deserve your undivided attention. They only have you for 6 days, 7 days a month, and maybe a Wednesday night dinner. So you need to give them 100% undivided attention. That's very hard to do when you're cohabitating with somebody.
Well, you're right. I mean, I have a lot of grandchildren, so I hear it. Like, Grandpa, which one now? Grandpa, you know, it's the same thing with your own children. And then now perhaps they feel timid about that if there are other children involved. Well, their needs supersede mine.
Hey, can I go back to your point about how expensive things are?
Yes.
Whether it be cell phones and... First of all, I don't believe that any child under 17 needs a web-enabled cell phone. I don't want a 14-year-old having the internet in their pocket, especially social media. I don't think there's any need for it. Kids can text, and they can. Children only have a cell phone for my convenience, so I can run my household. It's not for them. So I tell parents there's no need to have a web-enabled smartphone and all of that internet in their pocket. So that's one thing. But going back to the cost of these things,
it's too late. You're going to have Wi-Fi in the home.
Right. So, I want my children to have skin in the game in some way to make them understand how much things cost. Of course, they can't pay for Xbox completely, but if I know I have a budget and they have to at least spend part of their earnings on it, the decision-making process is so much more intense and real, and teaches them real-life lessons. And I know I'm a CPA, and But these things are laid out in my book in such a way that it seems that would make sense to people, and they do. They're responding to some of my basic financial lessons.
Well, it's
there,
empowering.
Also,
you know,
again,
it gives
some
them
of the basic fathering philosophies. People are really, yeah, they're writing to me saying, you know, I never thought of it that way, and I have been having knee jerk reactions, and that makes it that helps me diffuse situations, but it doesn't really give the best results in the long run for my children.
Yeah, I mean, you're right, and it's empowering to hear other fathers say, hey, look, I'm a CPA, I'm telling you, you have a financial responsibility for this, these are the guidelines that you should be using. Now, that's leverage, that's empowering, and to stand up to your family and actually provide what is necessary, and not luxuries that could lead to other bad behaviors.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
Judgmental sanctuary for their children. Non-judgmental sanctuary for their children. I like that a lot better, don't you?
Yeah, yes.
And yet, I think at times fathers are defensive. They feel like, hey, I need to provide, and if I can't, then my child are putting me down because I'm not shelling it out. I'm not able to provide. And so they associate their ability to give financially with their ego and their love. They think, I'll be loved if I just give them what they want.
And take it from me, and I am an expert at this in family financial planning and family tax planning, that the amount of money or the amount of things people have nothing to do with the caliber of children that are raised. And I've dealt with thousands of people, couples, families. This goes back to my point that men have to stop defining themselves by the external, by the woman they're with, by the money they make. I wake up every day. My basic personal philosophy is simple. I wake up every day. I do the very best I can to be a good Christian person, to take care of my responsibilities. I can't care about popularity. I can go to bed at night, and everyone I've dealt with could be disappointed. They cannot like something I've done. I don't care about that. I just can do the very best that I can, and that's my success. So there have been times when there was not a lot of money. There was times where I couldn't do certain things, do certain trips, do have certain things in the home, and my children could have been disappointed. But I can't let that has nothing to do with being an effective parent. And that's a very important part of my book, especially for the single father, is to really make your own self-definition. Be the man that you need to be. Present yourself that way to the world, and everything else be damned, and take care of your children to the best of your ability. Don't care about what popularity or how you're being rated by anyone, your children or otherwise. It's very, very important.
We want to be the best that we can professionally. On so many levels, we compete as men from our early childhood. It's, who's king of the mountain and who's getting knocked down. We position ourselves for that. We train ourselves for that. And yet, when it comes to fatherhood, we become pacifists and non-involved, or no opinion about it, or let someone else decide. Foxhole Father is about discipline, about taking charge, about getting better at what you should be good at. And I think constantly improving, doesn't have to be, well, after 40 years of making mistakes, I have a lot of good advice for you. it can be, hey, I could learn some help, use some help right now. What's good for me today? How can I get better at the moment? What discipline, what habits, what training can I do to become a better father today?
Well, it goes to exactly that. My main point in the book that goes right along with your point now is really self-observation is something that many people are running through life going moment to moment just to satisfy their selfish needs at others' expense without any deliberate thought. And the Foxhole Father is extremely deliberate about everything he does, knowing it can impact his children even when they're not with him. So exactly what you're saying, men have to start thinking about why they're doing what they're doing, what are their influences, what is the true motivation. Does the motivation come from outside of me? Do I want this car? Do I want a six-pack of abs because of the why? So it's very, very important that they self-observe and create a definition and a focus and a path that takes them down a road that they have chosen that is best for them and their children, and it's not dictated by society or others. That's one of the basic philosophies in my book for dads.
Christopher Whalen, our guest, Tony Kaye in the studio. Thanks, audience, for joining us, for sharing, I hope, in the passion of being better fathers and grandfathers, parents. Anyone listening to the sound of our voice, recognize how important it is to have a quality parent. And if you want to buy a quality book, foxholefather.com, go to the website, go to amazon.com, get your copy today, share it with everyone you know on your social network sites. Let them know there is common sense advice and a way to prosper and become a better parent every day at foxholefather.com. Christopher Whalen, thank you for being our guest, supporting the arts. Congratulations on this project, and we look forward to many more books and projects coming our way from your efforts. Before I let you go, any concluding remarks, and anyone out there on planet Earth you'd like to say hello to? I'm sure that's a long list.
I would love to say hello to my mother. I'd love to say hello to my three daughters, Caitlin, Megan, and Jessica, of course, for giving me my main life's mission, which is fatherhood. And I just urge everyone to love each other, to have understanding, especially couples that are together. To quote someone more famous than me, it is just as easy to say kind and non-judgmental words to your spouse and your children as it is to say harsh words. So I just want everyone to think about that during the day. Is everyone's having a hard time out there, and try to extend the kindness. People don't always show what they're going through. Always assume somebody else is having a harder day than you before you start interacting with them, and it can make the world a better place.
Well, thanks a lot, Christopher, for joining us this hour, and have a good time with your future projects. Where are we headed? Will there be a workbook scheduled or a sequel, or are you thinking about other topics to write about?
I have, right now, I'm compiling Foxhole Father stories. Fathers around the country, really around the world now, have been sending me their stories, and I want to do a tribute to them. To give Foxhole Father stories. So that will be coming. I have a Foxhole Business book that I'm working on to go along with this as well, some advice for entrepreneurs from my Foxhole perspective in business. And that's what's on the horizon right now. I will have definitely worksheets and other things on the website coming in the next couple of months to go along with the book, to go with some of the examples in the books, and just to be a little bit, just to have you thinking more about some of the topics in the book, to flesh them out a little bit. So, because people have been asking me for that, so I'm working on that right now for them.
And Christopher, I'd like to thank your three daughters for making a wonderful father out of you.
Thank you, Tony.